This is the Money Talks podcast. Subscribe now on iTunes. Listen to Michael Campbell and Money Talks live on Saturday mornings on CKNW Vancouver, 770 CHQR Calgary, 630 CHED in Edmonton, and live on the Radio Player app.
You're listening to Money Talks. My name is Michael Campbell. That's the very recognizable Money from Pink Floyd's monster album, Dark Side of the Moon, which was released in the U.S. on March 1st, 1973, and then in the U.K. on March 16th. So I've split the difference, and we're honoring this massive success today, including one of the most shocking stats from music history that I'll share with you at the top of the hour. But first, a quote from historian David Starkey, who recently stated on the BBC, "In the last 20 years, we've had a revolution by stealth, not in our streets, but in our values as a generation, brought up with no rules and no religion, has lurched with quasi-religious fervor into a puritanical groupthink where debate is stifled and difference of opinion cannot be tolerated." He goes on to give, "In politics, there's a new pseudo-religious intensity. Pro-Trump, anti-Trump, Remainer, Brexiteer confront each other in a sort of holy war." You know, it's hard not to think of the debate over pipelines and global warming in this context. But he then goes on to warn, "This does not bode well. Last time that religion so dominated politics was in the puritanical religion, the Puritan religion, which led to civil war, the abolition of parliament, and military dictatorship." Well, Mr. Starkey's quote came to mind when I read the findings from the latest Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation, which found that 50% of today's American millennials view socialism or communism as the ideal political ideology. Something like 51% of millennials would prefer to live in a socialist country or a communist one, compared to only 42% that prefer a capitalist country with a free market system that respects the rule of law, private property, and limited state intervention. What's kind of interesting, though, is the percentage of millennials who would prefer socialism to capitalism is 10% higher than the general population. Now, that's consistent with another poll, a recent Reason Roop survey, that found 58% of Americans 18 to 24 viewed socialism favorably. That finding echoed a 2016 YouGov poll that found millennials prefer socialism over capitalism. I mean, the millennials' disdain for basic freedom is also closely aligned with the attitude. Last year, the Brookings Institute found that 20% of students in the U.S. thought using violence to prevent someone from expressing views they didn't agree with is acceptable. 51% thought preventing a speaker from speaking by using loud and boisterous disruptions was acceptable. 53% preferred a learning environment where certain views were prohibited. Now, efforts to shut down speakers on university campuses who don't align with their views are really commonplace. I mean, it's happening all the time. But extremism has gone mainstream. But we're now seeing it also in the BC-Alberta pipeline debate, where significant numbers of people think it's fine to ignore the rule of law, prepared to use any means at their disposal to stop the construction of the pipeline expansion. Although I have to add, they're prepared to do anything, well, except give up their own carbon-fueled lifestyles. I mean, they still travel by plane, by car, by rail. They buy goods that are transported by plane, rail, and ship. They still use petroleum-based products. But I digress. The point is, they will ignore the law. When it comes to preferring socialism, there is good news and bad news. I mean, the good news is that most of the people surveyed had no idea what they were talking about. For example, 60% of the American public have no clue as to what's happening in Venezuela under the socialist regime, first of Hugo Chavez and now Nicolas Maduro. No idea as to the human rights abuses, the suffering, including starvation, forced prostitution by girls as young as 12 in order to pay for food, the 28,479 recorded murders in 2016. I mean, the majority don't know that before socialism was adopted in Venezuela, it was a middle-class country with the world's largest oil reserves. But now, the government-owned oil industry is on life support, over $1 trillion squandered, while over three-quarters of the country live in poverty. Also be interested to see if the Canadian public at large appreciate the abject poverty on some native reserves, the closest example of a socialist system we've got in Canada, all government-run. Half of the millennials surveyed by YouGov for the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation said they'd never even heard of Mao Zedong, the biggest mass murderer in history, a man responsible for policies that killed nearly 60 million people. So maybe, when asked about socialism and communism, they didn't know what they were talking about. But I think that's also the bad news. I mean, how do people get through public education? Clearly, some graduated from college, ignorant of modern history. As philosopher George Santayana famously said, those who do not learn from history are doomed to repeat it. And that's what scares me. But it begs the question, how did this happen? More importantly, who taught them that socialism is better than free markets? The markets that brought them their iPhones or Facebook or computers gave them more choices than any generation in history with a higher standard of living. How did they become young adults with such a blinding ignorance of historical fact? How are they so devoid of understanding the basics in economics and finance? How did so many get to adulthood with such disrespect for basic freedoms like freedom of speech? I mean, who taught them their blind intolerance was okay? I think for the answers, you've got to look at public education itself. Look to the universities. Look to the unquestioned celebrity status of anti-capitalists like Michael Moore, Noam Chomsky, Naomi Klein. Look to the parents, especially when it comes to the disregard for basic freedoms. I mean, what were they teaching them in the home? I'll leave you with this to ponder. It's the observation by Isaac Asimov. The strain of anti-intellectualism has been a constant thread winding its way through our political and cultural life, nurtured by the false notion that democracy means that my ignorance is just as good as your knowledge. Well, obviously, so many lack the knowledge. I'll take a break. I'll come back. Michael Levy's got a couple of great stories for us coming up. I got a big fat idea and a great area that you should be looking at with your investment portfolios. And speaking of that, Martin Muir builds here. I'm going to talk to him about the markets, but I got to talk to him about where gold's going. I've also got a shocking stat. Let me just stop for a second and say, I want you all to listen to this shocking stat. I want you to get everyone you know to listen to this shocking stat. This is about Canada. It's not just shocking, but it may be my biggest concern about Canada, just exemplified by the shocking stat. I hope you listen to that. Also, I've got a goofy award for you that's bound to get me in trouble. So all of that's coming your way. You're listening to Money Talks on the Money Talks Network. We're celebrating the music of Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon. We're sitting at the 35-year anniversary, or 55-year anniversary, rather, of its release. That is Us and Them, more from them, including my most shocking, this may be the most shocking stat I've ever had from the world of music or pop music. I'll share that with you in a few minutes' time. Michael Levy joins me right now. We got a lot of stuff to get to, but first, Mike, I'm just talking about anniversaries with Pink Floyd. Let me give you an anniversary. March 9th, you were here. It was actually March 7th on Money Talks, 2009. And that's when Money Talks officially went bullish after the credit crunch from the subprime mortgage crisis on the stock market, especially the Dow Jones and American markets. I've never stopped, by the way, since, but man, that's a lot. I felt old thinking about that. When we had Mark Leibovitz on, we had, Jim Dines was on the air with me then. We had Dennis Gartman on the air with me on purpose because we were going bullish on the markets after that miserable kind of 5-6 month period. And I remember you and I talking about it. It's a long time ago.
It was, Mike. Actually, we're talking about 2,266 trading days since that trough on March 9th, 2009. This is the second longest bull market in history. By the way, the longest was the one that ended in 1987. That went 3,109 days, and the third longest was in 1949, went 1,889 days. But listen to these numbers, Mike, had you been invested in the market. The S&P 500 has quadrupled four times its value back in March 2009, making it its bull run. And Mike, the Dow, same kind of thing, up 280%, NASDAQ up 486%, all in that time period from March 9th, 2009 to March 9th, 2018, yesterday.
Well, you know, seriously, we're in a business where getting it right is important, and you don't get to wade through all my hate email. And I just think of things, well, we sure got the markets right. We sure got the Dow Jones right. We got the Canadian dollar right. I'm still bullish on the U.S. dollar. You know, it's long-term. It doesn't mean short-term. Short-term, I'm nervous about the stock market, actually. But longer-term, yeah, I still think these major important trends are in play. But I'm very impressed, Mike, that you knew the number of days right off the top of your head there. You're going to get a gold star in my book for that one.
Well, maybe did a little research on that. But, Mike, it's very interesting because the talk has been about how this bull market is going to run out of steam, and fact is we might be in the waning days, and there's been lots of warnings of that. But, boy, there are people sitting on the sidelines waiting to buy, waiting for a reason to buy. We saw that after the announcement that the U.S. might be talking with North Korea, and we saw a Dow yesterday that was up over 400 points, 440 points. The S&P was up 47 points, both gaining 1.7%. So that tells you there's a lot of pent-up buying on the sidelines. And one other thing, and I think this is really important, Mike, is the worry is about the Fed and the raising of interest rates and inflation coming back. And this has been one of the worries for the market, that it may run out of steam. Well, job numbers yesterday. Did you see those job numbers?
Oh, yeah, fantastic.
Yeah, 313,000 jobs created in February, largest monthly gain since 2016. But, Mike, the big deal, the big number with the job gains, because people are worried that employment or wages are going to set off inflation, is that in the U.S., because of the positive prospects, 800,000 people joined the job markets looking for work in this past month, so that more than takes care of the 313 jobs that were found. And really, Mike, I don't think inflation is going to be something that stands in the way of this bull market. Maybe something else, but it won't be inflation.
Hey, Mike, let me just switch gears for a second to something else, because, I know everybody in Alberta will love to point fingers and laugh at this one to the people listening in Vancouver. But, I mean, I know you chatted about this during the week, but I want to get another update for me on the Vancouver gas prices. I mean, you want to fill up virtually any other place in North America but Vancouver.
You do. Mike, gas buddy, Dan McTeague, and that's followed North America wide, says gas could hit $1.50 a liter in the next few days, and actually go up as high as about $1.56 to $1.60 a liter this summer. And you say you're right. I watch gas prices. So let's say $1.50 a liter in Vancouver in the next few days. In California, there's the highest gas prices in the U.S. They're $1.17 a liter. In Blaine, Washington, $1.07. In Bellingham, $1.02 a liter. But back to your earlier conversations this morning and about Alberta and about the pipeline and about bringing product to British Columbia, gas prices in Calgary are $1.08 a liter. $1.08, Mike.
Yeah, well, of course, and so much of the price in Vancouver is wrapped up in taxation. I mean, people always say, well, why are gas prices higher in Vancouver? Well, they have a municipal tax. They have a transit tax alone that's 17 cents, per liter there. So, huge tax component to that. But I just think, this is in the context, we've got to be very quick here, but the context of, talk about restricting the flow out of the Kinder Morgan pipeline, which I don't think is possible. But what I do think is possible, by the way, is if they chose just to shoot crude oil down the Kinder Morgan pipeline into the Burnaby-Vancouver area and not have that mix, which they do right now, which includes things like gasoline and jet fuel. So that could raise havoc. But anyways, it's a hot topic right now, of course.
Here's the zinger, Mike, just before you go. Dan McTeague says if they stop the flow of fuel from Alberta to BC, we could be looking at gas at $2 a liter, $2 a liter. And boy, that would just wreak havoc in British Columbia. So those who are thinking that maybe it's a good deal not to have fuel flowing maybe should give it a second thought.
Well, I know, and I know that the head of Kinder Morgan says they wouldn't, stop the pipeline, but as I say, they can stop the mix within that pipeline. And that's where it could be kind of interesting. Mike, we'll give you a chat next week. Featuring music Dark Side of the Moon, I'll give you one of the most shocking stats I've ever heard in pop music at the top of the hour. But right now, let's think, I got a big fat idea. Time for Dan Blondell, CEO of Nano One Materials, to join me on the line. Now, Dan, this is a little different this week because I know you've got an expertise in an area that I think people should be aware about. I mean, I know that Nano One, they target today's lithium-ion batteries, a new generation of, the solid-state batteries. But so I wanted to get your take on lithium-ion batteries.
Great. Thanks, Michael. I really appreciate you having me on the show. My big fat idea is, of course, lithium-ion batteries. Maybe, first of all, they've been around for quite a long time, 25 years. They transformed the telephone. They made wireless talking possible, and they brought us, the smartphone battery brought us GPS, it brought us Wi-Fi, touch screens, motion sensing, MP3 players, face recognition, and, of course, that little convenient flashlight we use late at night. But, you know, those batteries have come a long way since day one. The energy density and the cost of lithium-ion batteries has really been steadily improving. And now it's finally ready for prime time. This is we're at a transformative moment in time where lithium-ion batteries are going to start to make a big difference, transform the automotive and energy sector. And that's what's driving Nano One, that's for sure.
Well, I mean, I'm looking at changes in China, for example, and of course we're talking electric vehicles, but man, it's just all the time we're hearing more on this, and it seems to me that the battery side is really the key going forward.
Absolutely. You know, in North America, we're definitely enamored with luxury electric vehicles, but let's face it, in China, they're choking on smog, and they have these aggressive subsidies in place, and they're looking to have 5 million electric vehicles on the road by 2020. And there's 172 automotive companies, I think, now in China. Two of them, BYD and BAIC, which are companies that most North Americans will never have heard of. Just in their EV section alone, they're bigger than Tesla already. The cost of batteries have come down tremendously, and China's aiming actually to have parity between the gas-powered cars and their electric cars by the mid-2020s.
Yeah, I would think that would be a real key, going forward, and we're going to get there. But what are the opportunities? Now, I'm coming back because I know, you with Nano One Materials obviously are looking at that side all the time, too.
You know, there's a lot of opportunities from blue chip right through to high risk. There's a very complex supply chain. You've got companies like Tesla and GM. Well, they buy their batteries from battery companies like Panasonic and LG. And LG buy their materials or chemicals from companies like BASF or Sumitomo Metal Mining. And at the top of the supply chain, you have materials like lithium, cobalt, nickel, graphite. They're all critical to the battery. Cobalt pricing has tripled in the last 2 years on the back of the demand for electric vehicle batteries. So there's lots of opportunities there. There's miners like SQM, Albemarle, Galaxy, Ganfeng. As for the new entrants, there's lots of them. They're large and small. I can't get into specific names, but we should be looking for transformative technologies that give these players access to the markets we've been talking about.
Let me ask you a little bit about what you're doing, though, with Nano One Materials. I mean, you're also, looking for the opportunities, just from what I know. I mean, obviously, you're going to tell me, but, in chemistry, manufacturing, it's all about innovation, it seems to me.
Yeah, so what Nano One is doing, it's all about the opportunity to change the way we manufacture the materials, the energy storing materials that go into lithium-ion batteries, and bring new materials that have better properties so they store more energy, they last longer, they're cheaper. Our technology can address markets for all the devices, be it a car, phone, or even storage on the grid, and we can make materials for some of the next generation batteries as well. The solid state batteries that are coming, they're going to be smaller, denser, thinner, safer batteries. So we're working on technology on that front as well. So we're kind of agnostic, whichever way the market goes. Of course, we're trying to follow it, but at the same time, we're trying to guide it. We're trying to bring new materials that will actually change and transform what goes into our batteries and basically give us more power at our fingertips.
Well, it's a fascinating area. We'll talk more about it. Dan, thanks for taking the time.
Great. Well, thanks again for having me on your show. You have a nice weekend.
901 Materials. Dan is, of course, the CEO. Take a break. Come back. I got a quote of the week and Martin Nierenbeeld here on Money Talks.